I understand a former music director of our church, Mr. Morgan, is here this morning, and some of you may remember him. And they were telling me all good things about you as I made my rounds around the back of the church. It's good to have you with us, sir. Well, you know, this morning is a very difficult topic to cover from Ephesians. And so to preface my message, I need to ask you a question. Have you ever had somebody push your wrong buttons? Somebody back there said no. Okay. We've all had our buttons pushed that shouldn't have been pushed, and we know what that causes. Usually it causes an infusion of, let's say, emotional unrest, where you want to love the other person with a brick, right? And it's either a fight or flight mode. It's either like we go right in with sword drawn or we back up, but it's not a good place to be when somebody pushes our wrong button, because the emotions inside of us become like Mount Vesuvius. And my wife and I were in Pompeii in November, and we got to see Mount Vesuvius from a distance, but we saw what happened to the city of Pompeii when it was completely devastated by the volcanic eruption. And sometimes when we erupt like that, when our emotions are pent up and somebody just kind of pushes you a little over the edge, pushes that little sensitive button, we have the potential to erupt. And just like Pompeii was wiped out, relationships can be wiped out as well as a result of conflict. You know, as long as we live on this earth, and as long as we're not living off the grid somewhere in like Alaska, and as long as we're in a community where we're going to interact with people on a regular basis, there is always that potential to engage in a conflict with somebody else that we're in disagreement with. And it all depends what we do with that conflict. Because I will tell you that there is conflict that causes wars between countries, between peoples. There's conflict in marriages or relationships that are almost like a war. There are conflicts that we can see in family relationships, siblings, parents, child. In the workplace, with our coworkers, there are potential for conflicts even in the church. Can you believe that? But it's the Lutherans that always get into those conflicts, right? For those of you who have not been here before, I have an agreement with the Lutheran pastor. I use his church and he uses mine as an example. But even in churches, you will find tension and conflicts. And it can happen almost anywhere. Now, I just want to add a little caveat, which may think that I'm going in another direction, but I'm not. Conflict is not always bad. Now, what do I mean by that? Sometimes a conflict will cause us to rethink our position. It will cause us to wonder, well, maybe there needs to be an adjustment in my position, and maybe not the other person, or both of us need to make an adjustment and sort of come to the middle and rethink where we are and how it plays into this conflict that we're engaged in with another individual. I believe some of the greatest advancements in history were a result of conflict and dealing with that conflict and coming up with a resolution. Sometimes, I know for me, we get into a comfort zone, right? None of us really like to be out of our comfort zone, but sometimes conflict will push us a little out of our comfort zone so that we can possibly abandon some old ways and old ways of thinking. Maybe we don't always have it right. One of the things I always joke about, but I'm a little annoyed that it's mostly true, my wife is usually right all the time. And I don't know why that's so, but if I heard it once, I've heard it a million times. I told you so. And I have to say, yes, you did, and you were right again. But sometimes conflict, I believe, when it's dealt with appropriately, will lead to a better understanding between two people or two groups. Our nation is in a conflict, and I'm not politically speaking here, but they say there's a divide right down the middle, 50-50. There's a divide in Congress and the Senate, and there's a divide here and there. And I believe conflict, when it's approached appropriately, I believe what it can do is bring two groups or two people together to come up with a better understanding of their positions and come to a place of resolution. But I think that could only happen when we properly handle conflict. That's what I want to talk about this morning. I believe there are biblical ways that the Bible shows us and instructs us and encourages us to follow in resolving conflict. And then there are ways that are not biblical. And I would suggest to you this morning, and I will make my case, that the biblical way is the better way to deal with conflicts. Now, folks, we could bury our heads in the sand and make believe they're not there. And I don't think that's the way to go, is to avoid conflict. I don't think the passive position of dealing with conflicts is honest. I think it lacks integrity. When we can't approach another person in love and tell them that something's troubling us, I think it's okay to do that. I think when we bury our heads in the sand and we don't confront it, I won't even use the word confront, I'll use a different word, carefront, I think it lacks integrity, and I think it also robs us of the possibility of growth in that relationship, whether it be a marriage or some kind of relationship we have in another individual. I think when we don't approach it, we don't carefront it, we don't put it on the table, we don't deal with it, we rob each other of growth in that relationship. Now, we can be honest about our position, and that we could tell the folks that my position is not airtight and there's room for better understanding on my part. So, and when you do that, when you go into a resolution situation, you're not digging in your heels, because the minute you dig in your heels, the other person's going to dig in his or her heels, and there's going to be a resistance to coming to a resolution. But if we enter into a conflict with at least the willingness to possibly have our position changed, or at least altered or adjusted or whatever, there's a chance that that conflict will not be resolved. So we got to go into it with the understanding we just may not be right, or maybe part of my argument's right. And if we do that, there's a good possibility. Now, there's a slogan that I find very helpful. When you're dealing with a problem, don't attack the person, attack the problem. See? Because a lot of times when you're angry with another individual, you go after them. You say, you know what? You're always late to work, and I don't even like the way you comb your hair. You know, I mean, you come up with some crazy things about the person. You're just a troublemaker. You're never going to resolve anything that way. You go in and say, hey, listen, this is the problem that I think I'm having with you, and I'd like to deal with the problem and not attack the person. One of the great early church fathers, St. Augustine, he lived between 354 and 430 AD. In fact, some of his writings are studied in every seminary, whether it's Catholic or Protestant, it doesn't matter. St. Augustine's works are revered when we go through theological school. And one of the key phrases he used, I'd like to use this morning, that I think really applies. He says, in the essentials, unity. In the non-essentials, liberty. But in all things, love. You see? He says, learn how to deal with essential matters as opposed to non-essential matters. But whether it's essential or non-essential, always do it in love. So many times we become embroiled in conflict and all kinds of buttons being pushed over non-essential matters. Let me give you an example. I don't usually like to name churches that I serve when I give examples, but I've been so far removed from this church, and they're a good church. I'm going to do it. So if you have any family in Hamden, Connecticut, I'm in trouble right now. We were pastoring in Hamden, Connecticut, just about a mile away from Yale Divinity School. And there, a civil war broke out in the church. Literally. People were shouting at the church council meeting. Do you know what they were fighting over? What color to paint the sanctuary. This is the truth. And the reason I'm telling you the name of the church is because I want you to understand I didn't make this story up. There was the mint green section, and then there was the peach section. The mint green folks had their ancestors help build the church, and the church was always mint green. The peach folks were the newer folks who said, we need to put a new face on this place to attract younger families. And so they went at it each other. Folks, what I tried to get them to understand is you're arguing over a non-essential matter here that's going to cause a division and a breakup in our congregation over Home Depot paint. Non-essential. So we have to learn, folks, how to choose our battles. And I want to say that maybe we don't even have to choose a battle. But certainly if we're going to engage in one, we should be a little particular about what we decide to confront or care front as opposed to what we should just let it go. Remember that movie, Frozen? It was a famous song forever until even the kids got sick of it. But let it go. Everybody was singing, let it go. Prayerfully determine what's essential and what's not essential. And if it's not essential, let it go. Stand back and look at the big picture. The big picture. Now, let me give you another example. In one of my former churches, my wife and I were so blessed. We were there for 12 years, and some of our greatest experiences were there, and we grew, and the church grew, and it was wonderful. But one time I was going into worship, and I was confronted by this woman, and she was not upset terribly with me, but with something that was going on in the church. And she just, I mean, the flames singed my mustache. Wow, as I'm going in to worship. And I was so upset over that. I couldn't focus. I had trouble preaching. I couldn't sing the hymns. I wanted to sing like Onward Christian Soldier and just go after her with a hymn book in my hand. But and in fact, she was staring me down in the congregation while I was preaching. It was like, yeah, you know, that kind of thing. And so I was really upset. I left church upset. I got home, and there was a message on my machine. Your mother is in intensive care in Derby, Connecticut. Whew. And so my wife and I shoot over to the hospital. And now she's put in the hospice unit. And my nephew's here. He remembers my wife, my niece. And I sat with my mom for like 3 days. I never left until she took her last breath. But I want to tell you something. All of a sudden, that became essential for me. I didn't even remember the woman that was yelling at me at worship 3 days earlier. I had completely forgotten about. Now, here's a good ending to the story. My mother knew Christ, and she's with the Lord. I'm not concerned about her eternal destination. So I know where my mom is. Okay, I could live with that. But when I got back to the church, the woman that was shooting flames out of her mouth gave me a big hug with tears in her eyes, and she said she was praying for me and my family. And we both forgot about what she was so angry over because it was non-essential in comparison to the bigger picture of life. And sometimes we get hung up in the smaller, minuscule things in life that we lose sight of all the blessings that are around us. So you see, what seemed monumental, even to me when I went home that day after church, I was so upset. I said to my wife, can you believe this person? Just before worship, all of a sudden it didn't mean anything at all. So sometimes we need to step back, look at the wider perspective of life, and put things in their right order before we lose our cool, draw our swords, and look to behead our opponent. And so where am I going with this? Paul's text this morning that Linda read just moments ago. Paul instructs us, get rid of bitterness, get rid of rage, get rid of anger, get rid of brawling, get rid of slander, and any other form of malice, he says, but be kind and compassionate toward one another, forgiving each other just as Christ, God, has forgiven you. Now, I know you guys are all saints. I could just see it on your angelic faces. But I had a lot to be forgiven for, okay? And so when I look back and I say, Jesus, you put all of that stuff under your blood and you forgave me, well, that puts everything into perspective about me forgiving other people, you see? Because that's what Paul is telling us. Forgive others as you have been forgiven. And I looked up that word bitterness in the Greek, and it is pikria. And you know what bitterness, the English language doesn't do it justice. Pikria, bitterness in the Greek, means poison, to pierce or infuse or penetrate a poison in another individual. And I thought about an inmate on death row who's been condemned to death by the courts, and he's lying on a gurney with a perfectly healthy body, and there's an infusion or an injection of poison into his healthy body, and it kills all the healthy organs and brings death to that individual. Friends, what Paul was saying, that's what bitterness does. It brings death to the people around us, and it brings death to us as well. We lose our joy, we lose our spirit, we lose our peace, we lose our rest, and he's saying, get rid of it. Before it starts to grow a deep root inside because of a conflict that you're having with somebody else, don't let it start. Get rid of it. And then he says, rage. Have you ever had a rage situation in your life? You know what I'm seeing a lot of lately? Road rage. Crazy people on Sunrise Highway. Crazy. I ride a motorcycle. I think I'm going to listen to my wife and sell that bike because, and Mark, don't be mad at me. My nephew rides, but I tell you what, boy, you go out there, you need a whole lot of prayer because of the road rage. And Paul uses a word here. You know what rage is in the Greek? Thumos, where we get thermal from. It means fire. Wow. For you married folks or who have significant others, you may have been in a couple of those where you may have slept on the couch that night, flying off the handle. You're always doing this. Rage, fire. And then he talks about anger, being excited and exasperated. And then he talks about brawling. And by the way, brawling in the original Greek, I love this one, shouting and screaming. Now, I know you guys who have relationships, you never shout and scream at each other. But shouting and screaming, flying, pots and pans. Paul saw all this happening. And he's saying, get rid of it. And then he says, get rid of slander and malice. And I love that part, and I'm glad he included it, because why? We fight with somebody, and then when we leave them, we tell everybody else what a louse that person is. We get on the phone. Barbara, I'm going to use you, but I love you. You know that Barbara. Hey, you know her. And I spread the word around about Barbara. How bad she is, how horrible she is. Because we want a team to join us to be angry with Barbara. So he says, get rid of that slander and malice. He says, instead, be kind and compassionate and loving and forgiving toward others. So what is Paul asking us to do? I'll tell you simply what he asks us to do. Be responsible for yourself. And I need to be responsible for in other words, don't put it all on the opponent. Say, what am I going to do with this anger? What am I going to do with this conflict? What am I going to do as a response to what's bothering me? How am I going to act? Forget about the other person. Because I want to tell you, in a tug of war, if one side's not pulling, you don't have a tug of war. Just take your rope and go, boop, let go, and let God. And so we need to think about whether we're going to enter that battle or not. We need to think about whether or not we're going to let those words come from our mind into our mouth and roll off of our tongue to the other individual. Can we hold our tongue and say, oop, this is not going to work out good if I let these words go. And we need to think about whether or not we pick up that telephone, send that email or that text. Because let me tell you something, friends. Once you hit that send button, you can't get it back. You can't get it back. Once you're angry and you, oh, I'll show you and I'll, how dare you, and then send, and then you go, oh man, I shouldn't have sent that. Too late. Think and pray before you act. And I think that's what Paul is saying. Because our society today is don't get mad, get even. That's what we talk about. That's why lawyers do so well. I'm taking you to court. Get even. And Paul's saying don't get even. Don't even go there. In fact, in Romans chapter 12, he says, heap burning coals on the other person's head. Now, if you read that out of context, that sounds cool when you're mad. Yeah, put coals on her head or his head. But that's not what Paul meant when he gave that term. Paul was talking about retaliate with kindness and love and put those coals on the other person's head and look for a response then. Paul believed when you do that, you give the other person something they weren't expecting. Why? They were expecting a fight, and instead you showed them love and kindness and compassion and forgiveness. And how do you make a comeback from that? My wife and I have a friend, Pastor Tony. He works for the Yankees now. I don't know how he got that gig out of the church, but I keep calling him, and it's not working because I'm a crazy Yankees fan. But Pastor Tony is down in Tampa now. And I remember a time when there was road rage on the road leading to the Midtown Tunnel, and the person was chasing him, trying to cut him off and angry with him. And Pastor Tony was so frightened that this guy was crazy. So when he got to the toll plaza, this was before Easy Pass, Pastor Tony told the toll collector, I want to pay for the guy behind me. And he did. So the guy can't wait to get through the toll booth because he wants to catch up to Tony before he gets to Manhattan because he wants to get into a fist fight. And the token collector said, the guy in front of you just paid your toll. And all of a sudden, the guy pulled back and he stopped following him. He put coals of fire, of love, kindness, forgiveness, and he put it on that man's head, and it just defused the entire attitude. Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. That's what Jesus said. And friends, I want to tell you, it works for me every time when I can remember. Matthew 5, verse 44, I think it is. Pray for your enemies and those who persecute you. And I will tell you, if you pray for those who upset you, you will dissipate in your anger, your bitterness, your rage, and all of those things. It will start to come down. It's amazing. And I'm telling you, it's guaranteed to work every single time you do it. Love and forgiveness is the hallmark to Christianity. If we're able to forgive others, and we should, we're reminded of how we have been forgiven for all the things that we've done wrong in our lives. It brings us to a place of peace where there is a warring spirit in us. It brings us to a place of rest where there's restlessness inside of us. It gives us a good night's sleep when we can't sleep at night, when we're able to let go and let God handle it and turn that other situation over to Him. If we struggle with it, friends, on a daily basis, if you're in the business world, if you're dealing with in-laws and outlaws and other people and neighbors where there's a lot of conflict, then all you have to do is just pray. Just say, Lord, help me change. Help me to look and act more like Christ when that other person pushes the wrong button in my life. Help me to respond in a way that's not natural for me because of your supernatural intervention. And listen, I want to tell you, if you could do that, to just stop and pray before you take out your sword, if you could just stop and pray and say, Lord, I'm not feeling good. I'm about to go into this, sword drawn. I need your help. Help me to be more like you and help me to forgive this person. The Bible says God will give you that peace which passes all understanding. And friends, you can't buy that on Amazon. It's a gift from God. Use it. It works every single time. And so, Lord God, I pray this morning I pray for all of us that are here and maybe those who are watching online. Maybe there's somebody who's in a conflict situation right now. There's division in the family, the marriage, the relationship, the workplace. Don't even want to go to work anymore. I pray that you could remove all of this anxiousness out of our bodies, out of our minds, out of our spirit, and help us to find a place in our hearts for forgiveness, kindness, that we might heap burning coals of love on the other person's head and bring resolution to what's dividing us. I pray this in the name of the Prince of Peace, Jesus Christ, and all God's people said, Amen.